Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, let's try this and see if we can get a program out this evening. It's the 24th day of April, 2014. This here program is live. And we're just living in buffering hell, so I don't know what's going to happen next. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where we live, by golly. And that's where you'll find entrance to the chat room. The chat room is open, and folks are wandering by. Jump on in. When you're there, it becomes an even more merry and happy and jubilant and fun and interactive experience. So HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you can often find a selection of the day's news stories. Last couple of days, I have been remiss. Had to be on the road yesterday. It was unavoidable, but I'm sorry about that. That won't happen again for a while. And also, of course, you'll find the... What third switch? I threw the third switch. Okay, so I'm not seeing a bunch of buffering, and I'm getting throw the third switch in the chat room, which means, oh dear God, if I'm not even... Okay, all better now, all better now. Stream is streaming, everybody's happy. But anyway, a reminder just at the beginning of the program, because that's how these things go. Well, dadgummit. We're back in another hole. You know, it's easy to get in one of those. We try to raise $150 on any given evening. And when we don't, that means that, you know, the hole gets to where the hole gets. You know, the problem is what the problem is, as the old saying goes. And so we're there. We're in one. And it's not, I'm not even counting yesterday, because that was sort of self-imposed, or, well, couldn't be helped. But the hole was around $400. So 40 folks at $10 a piece, something like that. Yeah, that's how it works out. The PayPal button, of course, is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address, if you prefer to work that away. And where shall we go this evening? Well, I've got something that I want to share with you at the beginning of the program. This is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. But sometimes it's nice to deviate from the norms and share something else besides thorns. And what do I mean by that? Well, one of the things that I've just been tied up all day, but one of the things that I intend to get up on the site in fairly short order as a feature on the feature rotator is a brand new documentary, and it is the more brilliant. I was going to run it yesterday evening, or at least run the audio of it. I was going to run it yesterday evening, but events intervened. So, as a sort of world premiere, this is, I mean, it really is. This is the worldwide interweb tubes group listening premiere. And while there is some beautiful and stunning photography in this, frankly, having been through it a couple of times now, I can tell you that the audio stands alone. But also, while the audio is rolling, I'm going to be posting this on the main page at headonradionetwork.com. And you can go and watch it for yourself. It's only about 40 minutes long, but it is 40 minutes well worth it. This is an amazing piece of documentary filmmaking. Paulette Moore is a professor at Eastern Mennonite University near Harrisonburg, Virginia. And if you know anything about the Mennonites, you know that they have a strong pacifist streak, a deep and abiding respect for social justice, environmental justice, human rights. And so Paulette became interested, by virtue of her connections out that way, with the struggle that is going on in northern Wisconsin, which I have periodically been absolutely humbled to be allowed to be a part of. And she began documenting it and making a project of a documentary about what's going on in northern Wisconsin with her students at Eastern Mennonite University. Well, a month or so ago, a couple of her students contacted me and said, "Do you have time to sit down and do an interview for this documentary?" And I said, "Sure, anything, and happy to help." And lo and behold, much faster than I expected, this documentary has been turned around. It is called "To Wisconsin with Love: Offerings on Water, Land, and Culture." And like I said, I will put it up at headonradionetwork.com. I will put it up on my Facebook page. I'll put it up on via Twitter, because this thing needs to get legs. This thing needs to get traction. If you know, for instance, you may know, and in fact, our good friend Dr. Allen, who helped us out monumentally last week, Dr. Allen, I believe, is traveling perhaps even as we speak, toward Washington D.C., where there is a hopefully large gathering of people opposed to the human rights, human health, human justice nightmare that is the Keystone XL pipeline. And this is what's going on in the Pinokies needs to be as broadly known as people now know about the Keystone XL pipeline, because that's the larger issue. This is all the same struggle. We lose as long as we view these individual struggles as exactly that, individual. We will lose and continue to lose. And that's something that I have been harping on, God knows, Lord knows you've put up with it, for many, many years now. The struggle in the Pinokies is the struggle in southern Illinois. Do you realize, do you know that there is a sit-in that is entering its third week at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri? Do you know that? How much has that been covered by the for-profit media? Yeah, I thought. And it has to do with a massive toxic strip mine in southern Illinois. So the struggle in the Pinokies is the struggle in southern Illinois, is the struggle over the Keystone XL pipeline, is the struggle on Black Mesa in Arizona, is the struggle over toxic coal terminals in Washington and Oregon, is the struggle over the pebble mine in Alaska, is mountaintop removal, is the toxins pouring into the air and water in on every frack pad in the United States. And, oh, by the way, I mean, you talk about making you just, I don't know, creating a new Olympic event. I'm sure the Olympic Committee could make a fortune off of it. Olympic lunch hurling. Hop, skip it. You know, we'll just call it the hop, skip, and puke. Vice President Joe Biden went to Ukraine to unveil President Not Sure's aid package for Ukraine. Guess what the jeweled centerpiece of the aid package for Ukraine was? Oh, sit down, get the duct tape, boys and girls, and stuff that tennis. I don't care, green, neon, orange, or, you know, traditional white. Fine, put the tennis ball in your mouth, and, ooh, because otherwise the neighbors are going to come running from the screaming. The centerpiece of President Not Sure's package for the Ukraine is fracking. Yeah. The United States wants the Ukraine to achieve economic and political thorough independence from Russia by fracking itself into a toxic future. That's going to work out great. But anyway, the larger point, though, is that all of these struggles are struggles that we have in common with one another. We do not achieve a victory on Keystone XL at the expense of fracking, and we do not, you know, whatever we do with it doesn't have to come at the expense of the Pinokies, and that doesn't have to come at the expense of Appalachia. We are all in the same struggle together. My goodness gracious, we're only 12 minutes into the program, and I'm already preaching. I'm sorry. But that's how it is. It really, really is how it is. And so my little contribution to this is to run the audio from this documentary, which features a lot of my dear friends, Pete and Joy and Mike Wiggins and Nick, and a beautiful poem that begins the piece by my dear friend Rob. Yeah. So let's roll this, and while we're rolling it, I'm going to post this over at the Horn website so you can watch it later, because it is as visually beautiful as the words are auditorily so. And hopefully you'll be moved. And I'm moved. Thank you very much, Karen. Karen has gotten us started this evening, and so we are now only $380 in the hole, and that is a big deal, Karen. It really is important and meaningful when you step up like that to lead the way. Now all Karen needs is 38 friends at $10 apiece. So hopefully we can get a big chunk of that taken care of. But herewith, via the class in documentary filmmaking at Eastern Mennonite University in Virginia, to Wisconsin with love, offerings on water, land, and culture.
In those days, I traveled into motion by mother's breath escaped gaze. Amazed, I tasted mimicry, watercress, the excess of the hills and their secret streams. Grouse drummed like the First Nations, like the heartbeat of the forest, and the deer were fleet as whimsy. But now, oh shit, now they want a permit to omit those hills, to gut the earth for iron, to poison the rivers, the air, to emit mercury into the minds of our progeny, to still those drums.
Thank you. supposed to be one of the largest iron ore deposits left in the country. Therefore, it's going to be one of the biggest mines in the country. Biggest open pit mine in America. That, people can't fathom what kind of hole there's going to be here.
According to the proposed project, this, you know, turns into a house sitting on the edge of a giant hole, of a 4-mile-wide hole with powder in the air that could make my son sick. You know, it's so much to lose.
The company, Gogebic Taconite, purchased the mineral rights for a vast area in northwestern Wisconsin, 21,000 acres along 22 miles of the beautiful Pinoki Range in Ashland and Iron counties. In 2011, GTAC proposed to build what could become the largest open-pit iron ore mine in the world. Although they claimed to have no interest in circumventing Wisconsin's safeguard mining laws, they ended up working behind the scenes for months to gut the same mining laws that they supposedly were not interested in changing.
Well, we're standing over the Bad River right now. We're on Elmhoist Bridge, and we're in the heart of the res, probably just a little south away from Lake Superior than the actual middle of the reservation.
You recognize this voice, of course. You've heard him on this program. This is my good friend, Bad River Chairman, Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins.
And from here, we're probably about 11 miles away from the potential mine site. This river here flows south off the southern end of our boundaries up into the Pinoki Hills and joins Caroline Lake, which is near some of the tailings piles and things that GTAC would have planned for where they would store their waste rock.
There's a long-standing history of people who have used that land, Ojibwe people who have used that land for hunting and gathering, and a history of mining, which has been, you know, used as a rallying cry for development.
What's happening isn't part of Wisconsin, and it's not the Wisconsin that I know, and it's not the Wisconsin that the people that I know who've grown up here and have lived here for generations know.
This is the voice of Pete Rasmussen, who is one of the founders of the Pinoki Hills Education Project. You can look him up online. And it was Pete who got me, I'd first heard about what was going on in the Pinokis via our good friend Bruce, who provided me with a book about it. And then subsequently, when I went to Fighting Bob the first time, I met Pete, and we started talking about the similarities between mountaintop removal and what the outlaw hillbilly Chris Klein has planned for the Pinokis. And that led to me being invited to come up there and try to speak and help a little bit. And Pete is as dedicated and brilliant an activist as anyone I know. And between people like him, Bill Hart, and Mike Wiggins Jr., and Joy, and all the other people who are rallied around saving this part of the country. Well, they are harnessing people power in ways that I've never seen it done before.
And so, you know, the places stay the same, but it's changing, and that's why we're fighting so hard to hopefully preserve what we have left.
And of course, for us, you know, in that waste rock, we know there will be sulfide minerals and sulfates that kill wild rice, and heavy metals like arsenic and selenium and all this other stuff. So, you know, to put your hand in these waters right here would be no different than putting your hand in waters that are right up at the mining site. And that's a no-go in our book.
That's that. Which way do you want to run in here now? Right along here? Right about there? I'll let you do this one first, and right here. Right here. One more time. That should stay. That should stay there. The objectives are to observe, take pictures, take videos, take people on trail rides, let them view this place the way it is now, and to chart that, organize it in books and diaries, indexes, just do everything that in some cases the conservation departments and protective agencies are supposed to do, because then you want to file a lawsuit and someone says, well, there's no baseline. We don't know if there's bobcats up there. We don't know if there's wet water, wetlands over there. So the citizens are doing a lot of that. And that's what Harvest Education Learning Project is supposed to be about. So the biggest objective is to be here to help educate people.
I see the flags that we put up here before we went before the Iron County Board during their first attempt to evict us. There are 9 or 10 tribal flags here. There's a couple of lodges left. I got a wall tent down there, which works out pretty nice. I've been pretty cozy in it. Jen and Larry live in that lodge, which was our onion hanging place back in the spring. Wild onions grow here in great profusion. Larry and I are racing partners, so Larry and I went out and knocked rice in August, and I said, hey, why don't you come to camp? And he came here, and within a week, he sheiked out that lodge. He does a lot of his beadwork and artwork in there. It's pretty cozy.
We're just getting started here. We got like 200 or 300 years of work up here to go, so we're just starting.
Manumaniki Nungum. Today we make wild rice, eh? See, we dried it last fall, but we didn't process it yet. But we'll parch it now in a big kettle, and then you're going to dance on it. Cool. And then we take a winnowing tray and winnow it. And the wind blows it away. And then we pack it. And then we eat it. So this is about 400 pounds of rice. It was too busy with all the politicking last fall to work on it, but we just put it away for the winter. And now we'll process it in the spring, which is traditional. We didn't need no refrigeration. We had a big refrigerator out here, right? But it's dry. See? The food that grows on water, eh?
This is like the Jamaican bobcat crew. You know? We are. We're gonna enter more than the Olympics. You want this here?
Yeah.
Hey, this is gonna feed some people here, you know that?
That's cool.
There must be some feast coming up or something. My Finnish buddy. Where's it? Dutch? Finn? Dutch?
What's that thing?
Finnish?
Dutch? Findian.
Findian?
Yeah.
Our presence needs to be preserved here because of all the things like this, the lessons about wild rice, the lessons about maple syrup, that's what we intend to try to contribute to the debate.
And this is what is happening all over the world now with indigenous communities and corporations and governments really that are protecting corporations rather than citizens or people that are living there. And so, you know, the issue is what are the mechanisms for Native people to try to protect their land? And many Native people, you know, use nonviolent resistance. They have vigils, they have blockades. They go ahead doing things that are illegal because it's their land. It's always been their land for thousands of years. And, you know, it's really difficult because, yeah, like we said, the law and order system, the justice system, the police system tends to really protect the white corporations and the profit.
Most people who are aware of the Freedom Industries chemical spill disaster see it as having started on January the 9th, 2014. However, there is a strong argument to be made that it's a disaster whose roots go much further back than that, back to more than 100 years of exploitation.
In early January, it was noticed by some people. They could smell a licorice smell, and they reported that to the Department of Environmental Protection, and a leak was discovered in a chemical pad.
Clean enough for regulation to be burned. The company that made MCHM in West Virginia, Freedom Industries, had a plant about a mile upstream from West Virginia American Water, which was their main intake, that supplied 300,000 plus people with water. Not only did it cause eye irritation, throat irritation, but it was causing rashes and sores on people's skin when it came in contact.
And by 11:30 that morning, the DEP had discovered what was going on at Freedom Industries. And yet throughout that entire day, nothing was done to warn or protect people against what was being released into the water system and by extension released into their bodies. So for roughly 7 hours, people drank poisoned water that had been poisoned with a chemical that no one really knew existed or even what its impact was on human beings.
Now, we're talking about 300,000 people without drinking water for a couple of weeks, and maybe even yet it's not safe. That's one-sixth of the population of West Virginia. If we would extrapolate that to, say, California's population, that would be 6 million people.
Here we're at the east gate of the forbidden zone. You can't be within 600 feet of this road on either side for about 4 miles of it now. And so this is where they were bringing the rocks down, and they were dumping them over here and then here. So this is where they were. The Tyler Forks River is just down at the bottom of this hill here. Here we have a truck coming down the hill. I guess it's about the eighth or ninth truck of the day, I guess, by the time I got there. A semi pulling out onto the highway. There's a few sheriffs behind me. And it makes it out onto the highway on their bulk sampling, which is taking about 2,400 tons of rock out of here. What you have is a mining company taking rock out of a mining company land and shipping it to a mining company in Minnesota, and nobody calls it mining. You know, there's no, the way that they change the laws, again, the DNR basically doesn't have much say, honestly, and will say as much. So, you know, it's really for their testing. It's for their investors. It's for them to design a facility. There's a lot of confusion that somehow this is environmental testing or it'll help us solve whether there's sulfides or asbestos or these other things, and it's not about any of that. It's about, you know, information for them to design a plant.
So we're standing by the Tyler Forks River right now. We're on county land, Iron County land. The proposed mine site is to the southwest of us along the ridge here. The mine site sits on land owned by RGGS, which is normally enrolled in the managed forest land through the Wisconsin DNR, which means that the land is open to hunting, fishing, hiking, and so on. But they changed the laws recently to allow them to close off a 600-foot radius around any mining activities, which means that they still get the benefit of being in the MFL program. They don't have to pay land taxes, but the public is not allowed on that land. So we're going to be going into that zone. We're right down here by the end of Moore Park Road, by the river. We're going to hike south along the river until we get to this gorge, and then there's a snowshoe trail that cuts west from there, and the mine site we're going to is right about there. It should be about a 20-minute walk, I think. I've been up twice so far. I was up here Monday before last with a couple of other individuals, and on that trip, one of the individuals I was with was actually attempting, she went up wanting to get a citation for trespassing. So we walked up there, we walked around, we talked to security, we talked to Bill Williams, he told us we weren't supposed to be there, and we basically just waited for the sheriff to arrive. And when the sheriff got there, they asked one of the individuals I was with, they asked us all to remove ourselves from the property, and the individual I was with asked repeatedly for a ticket, and he told her that they didn't feel it was appropriate at that time. So another thing about this area is it's incredibly wet. If you walk up here in the summer and the fall, you'll walk over certain areas of ground where with every step water sort of oozes out of the ground. And even in the middle of the winter, we've had one of our coldest winters in, I think, 25 years. Average temperature's been like 3 degrees. And even so, you'll see all over the place around here, there's still open springs that are flowing. So when GTAC claims that they can work safely up here because the ground... Now we're staying at the rim of bulk site number 5. The Tyler Forks River is just down past this site. If we're in the daylight, you would be able to see that there's actually a ravine that leads straight down to the river, taking material from. The area of Tyler is less than an acre total, but despite that really small surface area, they had these huge 25-ton dump trucks coming out, up to 25 a day, the ones that swivel in the middle, big yellow ones, for about that drop to that tree over there. We're being observed.
West Virginia has a very long history of being industry friendly. Our last governor, who's now our U.S. Senator, Joe Manchin, actually wanted to change our motto from wild and wonderful to open for business. Our government doesn't care about our people.
That morning, mothers were making bottles of formula in hospitals. It was being used in schools. It was being used in stores. It was being used in restaurants. It was ubiquitous. Well, it was being used for what water is used for. And yet this whole time, this window of hours upon hours of being fired down the road, that baby whose first was made of earth, then 10 or 15 years have gone by, we've never done any science, we've never done any studies, and we just say, well, I guess it happens. And the chemical company, or the coal company, or the taconite, wherever you are, they say, well, it couldn't possibly be us, I mean, it's 15 years. And so once again, they take their profits and externalize the cost. Innocent. That really is what's at stake here.
Because when a company can find a cheap way to dispose of this pollution, and the regulations are either weak or ignored, that means that somebody else has to bear the cost. The American public, much more than it has been, and it's simply who gains and who pays. And really, the way it should be is, you know, if you make the mess, you clean it up, and you pay the full cost. And future generations will have a lessened opportunity to have quality of life in an area. That's a negative externality, and it's unjust.
And the way I like to explain it is to say, if someone had called the governor that morning and said, received word that terrorists have put their supply, wouldn't rationally expect the powers that be to say shut this port.
See, it's like, who can we target? Who can we put the finger on and say this is your fault, and the taxpayers and the people who are affected by this are not going to pay for your mistake this time? It happens all across this country. There's a huge spill with the Gulf spill, with these tar sand pipe spills, with these fracking explosions, with all this contaminated water and air. And who's left to pick up the bill? It's we the people, it seems. I think that's totally 1,000 people should be accounted for.
At the expense of people and their communities and their government. But if we characterize this as a negligent poisoning of the water supply of 300,000 people, then perhaps if we, by comparison, what we can say is that the 100 years experience that sent is a body of act. Because it's to what is proposed for the Pinoki Hills of northern Wisconsin lies in the fact that that the person who wants to do what he wants to do to the Pinoki Hills of northern Wisconsin is a West Virginia coal baron. So he's coming to Wisconsin from the mindset and the business model of pillage and plunder that has been the lot of
this year. The DNR was doing site inspections of where they wanted to do bulk sampling, and a DNR employee picked up a piece of rock that he had identified as grunerite. It's an amphibole rock. There's about five different kinds. They've known that it could be around for a long time. It's been documented here. The company essentially denied that it was here. And the DNR had found it and had it tested, and it was positively identified as an amphibole material.
That's the iron formation right there, the red, the Ironwood Iron Formation. 2.7 billion tons of ore. It's huge. Occupational exposure to this stuff is bad. There's no doubt about it. And, so if this were to be mined, the air quality would have to be monitored. There would have to be filtration systems. I mean, it's an issue. It doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be mined, but it definitely is an issue that we need to consider before any permit goes through.
The rock has been exposed in the ore body for pushing 2 billion years. So that's what testing is out. And those who have jumped to conclusions about what made.
So GTEC has said that is incorrect. And what do you say to that? How do you
address this? Is not grunerite?
It's not asbestos.
It's not asbestiform, and it's not grunerite. It is not this very simple, but one from here has been X-rayed at the University of Wisconsin is that of grunerite. And it has all of the characteristics that you would expect. Plus, it is the mineral that you would expect in this rock. I would expect my students to call that grunerite because that's really what makes sense in this rock.
A geologist that we met with him privately to keep him from embarrassing himself because he hadn't done the testing, he hadn't looked at it with the magnifications and things to be able to determine what it was.
Right. So they come out and they, in some places they get really long and narrow at the end. So this one, yeah. And the rock is mostly grunerite. I would say the grunerite is, you know, this is just a visual estimate, but I would say the brown here is the grunerite percent. Ooh, look at that stuff. That's remarkable. Right there.
And what's remarkable about it?
How long and slender it is. I mean, this is classic asbestiform grunerite, amosite. That's what that is.
Whether or not somebody has an opinion of something, of one thing or another, has very little to do with it, because we can't go to if he said it wasn't there, we couldn't go to the DNR and say it's not there. So we have to go on science, and we have to go on fact.
But he is a scientist, no? So, I'm just not clear. Are you saying that he's incorrect?
Yeah, he's incorrect. He's shown to be incorrect by...
I'm seeing here. But, you know, we need a lot more study on this. I think it's pretty clear that it's not pretty clear. It is asbestiform amphibole.
People should have facts before they make accusations or before they enter into the debate.
So has he retracted what his findings were then? And are you demanding that?
Personally, I don't care whether he retracts his statement or not. I think, as I say, it's mostly illustrative of there are people who are interested in the science, and they let the science bring them to a conclusion, and that's what we're trying to do.
GTEC, when you handed them that sample, what did they say? Who was at that meeting, and what did they say?
Right in the rock, and
gave them.
I gave it to them.
Had they done testing? How did they know that?
I don't know what testing they had done at that point, and I don't know what testing they have done since then. This stuff was originally found at Bulk Sample Site 4, which is one of the places that they had proposed to take a lot of rock out to send to Minnesota to have ground up and have tests done on it. And so I assume that they had studied it there, and that's where the grunerite was originally found. But then later they took that out of their bulk sampling plan, so they didn't actually end up sending a bulk sample from Bulk Sample Site 4.
They brought paramilitaries in last year with assault rifles, illegally perched them on the ridge.
How did you know they were here?
A friend of mine walked up there with his wife, and one of them stepped out from the bushes. And they had assault weapons and were faces covered and wouldn't identify themselves and were in camouflage. And he took pictures, and we sent it around the world. And Bulletproof Security was there, and, you know, illegal. The company had gotten him in at a moment's notice to patrol. And, you know, they were an unlicensed security company working in the state who wouldn't identify themselves. And, you know, there was kids along on that hike, and these guys had these weapons out, and it was very scary.
In essence, what Chris Klein and Gogebic Tak and I and that whole crowd are saying is, trust us. But what have Chris Klein and Gogebic Tak and I ever done to earn the trust of the people who live there? Chris Klein's not going to live there. What have they done? What have they ever done to prove that they can be trusted? Well, nothing in my estimation, but they have done things to prove that they can't be. I believe one executive is under indictment in Spain for poisoning people's water there. And then you become, whether it's a mountaintop removal operation or, you know, Freedom Industries poisoning the water of 300,000 people, well, it involves violating the law. And what we know is that these people, they're actually better at violating the law than they are to destroy clean water for 100,000 years.
So the real issue here is, you know, what do we value as humanity? Do we value corporate profit and extraction of resources from the earth? Really is highlighted. You know, do we listen to everybody's voice and then come up with a decision that tries to really meet everybody's needs? Or do we just decide, well, the corporations have all the power, the government's on the corporation side, and so it doesn't really matter what happens to these native people? And all too often, latter case, where what is sacrificed is people's lives and people's traditions and cultures.
How do you think these lights are being powered right now? How do you think you get hot water being paid? There's blood on your hands, whether you know it or not. That blood is the blood of my people, blood of miners. It's the blood of gas workers, of oil drillers, you know, just so they can have a life. We're already on the edge. We're teetering. And that's going to take one stiff wind for everything to go down.
This is a genie that once let out of the bottle cannot be put. But if they reach the right decision and the Smoky Hills have been destroyed without any consultation or any consideration of the future, the water that used to run clear and clean in Appalachia doesn't anymore, and the water that runs clear and clean and sterling and pure in Ashland and Iron counties is not more.
We have the right to regulate ourselves and continue on a gathering in our context. This elk ceremony is one of our. Washington got the powers to negotiate with other nations, England, France, Ottawa, Chippewa, Iroquois, and that's what they did. The United States government negotiated with the Ojibwe nation and signed a treaty.
For a very long time, the state of Wisconsin had effectively been violating federal treaties, letting Indians continue to hunt, fish, and gather in the lands that they had ceded earlier.
In the late 70s and 80s, we fought a court case, LCO versus Wisconsin, or Lacouture versus Wisconsin, of which we won. And when the judge ruled, yes, we indeed did.
The way the law reads now is that sovereignty means that tribal governments have the power to regulate themselves, to pass their own laws and be ruled by them.
So when you talk about reserved right, it's not something that Wisconsin gives the tribes or the federal government gives the tribe. It's something that they reserve.
We think it's long-term. The market in sugar of different kinds has doubled in the last 5 years.
We keep it pretty simple. Mm-hmm. These are metal. These are spiles. And this is a drill with a bit. And we offhand, the tree and stuff comes out. Water. You know, the tree, the sap rises and it comes out the hole and it goes into your bucket and then you pour it into a big kettle or a flat pan and you drive off all the moisture and it turns into syrup and ultimately maple sugar.
We're going to tap some trees up there this year for medicinal reasons, cultural reasons, sharing, in particular eating, which I really like. This is okay if you create a product up there. You have to eat it, which is nice, because that's a research center. But I think what we got going here is the label, Pinoki Gold. It's an issue that it is compared to the extractive industries that are coming in here and manipulating part of the county with dollar signs.
So we're taking that on. And that's been really amazing because it's, again, and now creating systems to move on that. So commercial syruping, agriculture, tourism, and looking at our space as a space filled with resources and assets that we could protect and continue to thrive by using them.
I'd say we're in that point of what our people would call Mokongesis, that red sky at morning. The bulk sampling has happened, and a lot of them have started the day yet.
It can be scary. The other side doesn't play fair. And I tried to do something worthwhile with it. Human beings have a tremendous capacity for screwing up, but we also have a tremendous capacity for beauty and creativity and marvelous big brain thinking. To Wisconsin with Love, a new documentary by Paulette Moore and her documentary filmmaking students at Eastern Mennonite University. In fairly short order, that will go up at work. We're going to 8 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday, so it's hard to say. But we will take a break and try to get this going in short order. This is listener-supported conversation radio to the extent that I'm even able to get it out to you. Emphasis on listener-supported. We're trying to raise $380 because of what we haven't been able to raise since basically Tuesday. Or this is an attack on Ben, an attack on us. I don't know. But we're trying to find out. Anyway, we'll take a break. We'll come back. This is The Horn. I am Bob Kincaid. And cross your fingers. We may get a program in.
you feel those hills around you? Can't you feel bring home? Hills of home.
So all alone.
It is 11 minutes past the hour of 7 p.m., and I'm still working on a couple of things here. But I wanted to let you know that, among other things, at least I got one thing accomplished. The link to the documentary "To Wisconsin with Love" is up at Head On Radio Network. It's in the main story rotator at the very top of the page. There's a lovely photograph accompanying it of the Tyler Forks River. And I hope you will take the opportunity to view it at your earliest opportunity. And then, and this is where it gets important, this is where the activism kicks in, then share it. Not because I'm in it. My ego is not quite that large. But because this is as good a manifestation of that idea that a harm to one is a harm to all, and that if we stand together, we've got a fighting chance, but if we let them pick us off one by one, we're toast. This is an excellent example of that. To Wisconsin with Love at headonradionetwork.com. It links to the Vimeo file. And what we'll do right now, while I'm just pulling things together and waiting to see if the buffering is going to slow down, for your consideration, first and foremost. One of the reasons you want to see this, as opposed to simply hearing it, is to get to look at the sleazy, filthy, bloodthirsty, greed, avarice, profit-driven monster from GTAC. Yeah, you probably, well, maybe you did, maybe you didn't. I mean, there's a lot of buffering there for the members of the Horn Family Commune congregation who are listening live. Wow, what a mouthful that is, but as opposed to the podcast, for whom there won't be issues. But it's beautiful. Well, we need some science to tell us whether or not this is asbestos rock. Well, he's a scientist. Well, and did you get to hear that line? We met with him privately to keep him from embarrassing himself. Can you imagine what that private meeting was like? Everything but a horse's... Now, son, looks like you're working hard there trying to teach them little tykes about some geology there. Be too bad if anything happened to your house. No, we're not making any threats. You know what? Hey, what's that laying over on the ground? Son of a gun, that looks like a big bag of money. Doesn't it look like that to you, son? Well, it ain't mine, so it must be yours. And then when you don't play ball with them, they sleaze you. So yeah, there really is asbestiform rock in those strata. But bear this in mind, and this is important. If there was a rock strata of fossilized unicorn sparkle pony farts above that iron ore, by the time they got done blasting it, it too would be toxic. If you've ever listened to Dr. McCauley's talks, you know that there is no such thing as a benign ultrafine. By the time a particle becomes an ultrafine, that is anywhere from 100 microns down in size, roughly the size of a virus, whatever it is that has been reduced to ultrafine particulate size becomes toxic and mutagenic inside the human system. Ultrafines pass through the heart-lung barrier. Ultrafines pass through the child. pass through individual cell walls, and there has yet to be found an ultrafine particle that is not dangerous. So, even if that asbestiform rock was... Oops, sorry, let that one sneak out. By the time they get done with all the blasting, they will have covered that entire region in ultrafine particles that are part and parcel of the health crisis in Appalachia. Well, guess what? Silica, it comes from the blasting of sandstone. Guess what? There's a whole bunch of in the Pinoki Hills up above the iron ore and the layer of asbestos-sparing rock. Hey, look, it's silica. Yeah. So just bear that in mind. And no, the buffering is damned well not going away. It's past the hour. And if you can't tell, yeah, the urge is desperate to catch up with the bill-paying hole that we're in. We are $380 at least in that hole and badly in need of your help to continue this effort. Via the traditional mail route. Going to maintain a stream or not.
.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
News the greenies are not going to like today. Biofuel made from corn is actually worse for the environment in the short term than straight up gasoline.
Ethanol made from corn residue may actually be more harmful to the environment.
Harmful to the environment. Trying to help is pointless.
Yep. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, earlier in the week we celebrated our 500th episode of the Green News Report. And how did the fossil fuel industry celebrate? There was another explosion, this time a natural gas explosion, in the tiny Wyoming town of Opal. The entire town had to be evacuated. The good news is, as we go to air, the residents are now being allowed back into town, and there were no injuries.
Yes, thankfully. No word yet on the cause of the explosion. And meanwhile,
also... Here was the cause. It was fossil fuel. It was sunshine. What else do you have for us today?
Well, has been ordered to pay a landmark judgment, $3 million, to compensate them for health acts as a predicator. Big news for the Keystone XL pipeline. The State Department announced on Friday it will again delay the permit application for the proposed pipeline from Canada after a federal judge in Nebraska invalidated the new route for the controversial tar sands project. That means a final decision will likely be delayed until after the midterm congressional elections.
One thing that's interesting here is that Republicans have said that it is Democrats that are holding up this pipeline. The fact of the matter is the first delay that happened was because Republicans in Nebraska wanted a different route. And now we've got another delay because a court has said, yeah, you can't use that route now until we settle this case. But Republicans aren't known to let facts get in the way of a good political fight, I guess.
Meanwhile, there's a week-long protest action against the pipeline being held right now on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. by a group called the Cowboys and Indians Alliance. Jane Klebe of Bold, Nebraska says the State Department's postponement only strengthens their resolve.
This delay continues to stiffen our spine to make sure that the president rejects Keystone XL. And so the next few months we're going to keep on organizing, keeping our landowners together who refuse to sign with TransCanada. And we're also going to turn our eye to elections and make sure that folks who support the pipeline are defeated in their elections this cycle.
Also, speaking of oil, this week marks the fourth anniversary of the BP oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Yeah, when BP's push for profits at all costs led to a rig explosion that killed 11 men and caused the largest offshore oil spill in world history. The New Orleans Times-Picayune reports BP's oil is still washing up on Gulf Coast beaches and still harming wildlife.
The bones of black mangrove stumps are all that remain of what was once a thriving bird rookery here.
There are no pelicans, no mangroves, and worse, much of Cat Island itself is washing away.
And like the Exxon Valdez oil spill, BP is still fighting in court to avoid paying federal fines and damages to the people and businesses hurt by their negligence. Meanwhile, bad news for the Arctic. In the same week as the BP oil disaster anniversary, a scathing new report confirms the oil industry is completely unprepared to respond to an oil spill of any size anywhere in the harsh extremes of the Arctic. The National Research Council report warns U.S. personnel, equipment, transportation, communication, navigation, and safety resources are all inadequate to respond to a spill.
The U.S. Coast Guard had warned and warned against this, and yet the Obama administration gave licenses to Shell Oil to go up there and drill. So we're doing it anyway. You can stop all this stuff about we're not prepared to clean up an oil spill. We're not going to spill anything up there. Don't worry. For much more on that and the stories we couldn't get to today, Tom, will not BP, not Shell Oil, to stay on your public airwaves. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your 501st Green News Report. Don't worry. Be
happy. Don't worry, be happy. You know, that was a lovely little song, and it's a damn shame that every time I hear it now, I have to think of that disgusting old Yahoo, George H.W. Bush, appropriating it for his misbegotten presidential campaign. Blech, I hate it when that happens to good music. Anyway, we're still buffering like crazy. Graham, if you can call this a program at this point. And by the way, I've been in pretty much constant communication with Ben over this entire buffering issue, and hopefully we'll have a fix by next week. I mean, I plan to be, but you know. So I don't know. So I'm going to sit here and just watch this thing to see if it buffers, and when it does, I'll restart the stream again and again and again. I think, like I said, in excess of 20 times in the first hour, which kind of makes it a little bit difficult to maintain much in the way of focus. I'm not, but there we go again. And no, okay. So I don't, who knows? Now, what I say, there are server companies you can use that charge princely amounts of money, but they swear their servers are, you know, 99.9% of the time always on. But under the circumstances, I think we'd be hard-pressed to keep that bill paid. We can't add any more bills to the list. So we'll just keep plugging away. Where to go into? Oh, I've got some happy news. Really good, awesome, happy news. You may recall that he told us not too awfully long back that he and his partner of many, 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 many years were contemplating nuptials. Well, I am happy to announce, on behalf of Edward and his partner, that a wedding was celebrated in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on April. And I'm particularly fond of that, of course, because it means that they share a wedding anniversary with Agnes's birthday, which is really cool. And Agnes has talked to Edward on a couple of occasions, and I will let her know, and she will be absolutely tickled pink. So congratulations, congratulations, congratulations on what I hope was a happy day, and for which we all hope there will be many, many, many happy anniversaries. So I just, we need a little good news out there. Kind of got it. By now, of course, you know about, Craven Bundy. I call him Craven Bundy. Granted, his name's Cliven. But all of a sudden, everybody's running away from Craven Bundy, whom I call Craven Bundy because of the theory they had when they were going to have their own little Fort Sumter moment out in the middle of the Nevada desert, and declared that if the feds are going to start shooting at us, we're going to put the women and children up front so that we make sure everybody sees the government gunning down the children's and the women's. Yeah, when it comes to teabaggers and birthers and deathers and tenthers and booger eaters and igumfoos and libertarians and birchers and pig lickens, women and children first takes on an entirely new meaning, doesn't it? And of course, the latest saga of Craven Bundy has to do with the fact that Craven ran up to a journalist the journalist was interviewing him, disclosed who he was and everything, and Craven Bundy decided to start expressing his opinion of the Negro. There was some commentary on my Facebook page about it all, and I have to give kudos to our buddy Horst for his remark. I went into a laughing fit when I read it. Because, you know, Klansmen will be Klansmen just any old time. In particular, yeah, I got to get down to it. But we'll get there in a second. Oh, here we go. Oh, okay. So the story. Craven Bundy was quoted by a New York Times reporter as saying last Saturday, how does this even start in your brain and make its way towards your mouth without something inside you going, I don't think I probably ought to be saying this. You know, when you're raising children, we've got a one word admonition, at least in this house, where we look at filter. Craven Bundy goes outside of his house every day to speak to the assembled faithful there in Boston. The story is rife. I mean, it is absolutely loamy, rich soil filled with little seeds of irony. Yeah, Bunkerville. And he said, and just one more thing. Let me tell you about the Negro. Huh? I was driving past a housing compound in North Las Vegas, and it was a government house, and there was always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch with nothing to do. And he continued, saying of people of dark skin, because, who knows, They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves, picking cotton and having a family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy? They didn't get no more freedom. They got less freedom. Now, I realize this is swinging at low-hanging fruit, and I'll be the first to admit that it's low-hanging strange fruit. But, okay, so let's just blow right past they abort their young children. Because you can kind of go back to that paragon of Republican virtues. What's his name? Bennett? He spreads his virtues around the public airwaves every day. When he's not in Las Vegas, down to nothing but his boxer shorts with a bag of Cheetos and the little press it button of his own personal one-armed bandit in hand. We're going to blow past they abort their young children. Let's go to the second assertion of Craven Bundy. They put their young men in jail. Who's that they you're talking about there, Craven? Women and children first! Wolverines! They put their young men in jail. I don't think they do that. I think the prison industrial complex has a little hand in that. I think private for-profit prisons that insist on jailing people in order to maintain the bottom line for their shareholders have a little bit. Your Honor, I mean, he looks like a pretty serious stream litterer there. You know, the maximum penalty for stream littering is 10 years, hard time, and no parole, and three. I think he's a three-time loser stream litterer there, Your Honor. Needs to come out to Corrections Corporation of America's corporate correcting facility. 10 years of hard labor eating that prison cheese, and he won't stream litter no more, Your Honor. Yeah, you know how it works. So I don't think they put their young men in jail. And I don't think you can draw a bright line between they're in jail because they never learned to pick cotton. Old time, apparently, in Bunkerville, Nevada, old times there are not forgotten either, even though it ain't looking away, well, Dixieland. And then this. I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton and having a family life and doing things? Shall we unpack that for a moment? The fact that in slavery there was no such thing as a family. I mean, there could be a family, but that family could be broken up by old Mars. Any minute of any hour of any day. Because he might get a good offer on a good, strong young'un. As far back as the writings of Mark Twain, he remarks upon the horrors of broken African-American slave families. We don't think about it so much because, well, we don't think about it so much. But in the generation following the end of the War of Southern Treason, countless black families expended every effort that they could make to find the families that had been split up and driven apart and cast as seeds to the wind. To the point that some of that search continues to this day. Here's where I mark myself as a hopeless white guy. Even the book Roots was a product of that attempt to somehow, historically, tie back together again families that had been unwillingly shattered by white people. So no, Craven Bundy, you old fool. They weren't better off picking cotton and having a family life and doing things. So then it was, well, the comments ran fast and furious for a little bit. Faith was the first in. It was only a matter of time. But then Horst chimed in. Clivin, how many dang times we got to tell you, you can't just come out and say it out loud? Because that's what he done did. But Horst has also provided me with a postscript, a denouement, if you will. It wasn't just his comments on the Negro. Talking Points Memo, about a half an hour ago or so, posted the rest of Craven Bundy's comments. This is based on additional video that was published by the Washington Post. And it was all in the context of wanting to know why no one was running to his defense except stupid white people. Oh, dear. You know this is not going to end well. Yes, Steve. Steve writing in. He, speaking of Craven Bundy, he did not say that. He couldn't have said that, right? Say it ain't so. Sorry, this is not a joke. This is a real live, honest-to-goodness, unreconstructed Klansman, birther, deather, tenther, tea party, tea bagger, bircher, libertarian, repiglicking. Yes, he did, Steve, really say exactly that. I wonder if they were happier picking cotton. I don't know, Craven. Let's let you pick cotton for a little while and see how much happier you are under the hot and blazing sun of, say, Dallas County, Alabama. Oh, you think it's hot in Nevada? Mm-mm, Craven. No, no, no. We're going to have to dip you in SPF Avogadro's damn number every morning by your little old white pinky heel and send you out to do your cotton picking. And you're still not going to be all right. Because it's not like Nevada where it's a dry heat. No, it's a sopping wet heat where the air itself feels like you're trying to breathe through a sponge out there in the fields. Yeah. Happier picking cotton. Damn. I like it a lot better when this stuff is done up as parody, as obvious satire and social commentary. You know, bet you know where I'm going.
When you were slaves, you sang like birds. Come on, how about a good old nigger work song?
Nigger work song.
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a belt out of you? Some get a kick from cocaine.
Hold it, hold it! What the hell is that shit? I'm in a song. A real song. Something like Swing Low, Sweet Chariot.
Swing Low, Chariot.
Don't know that one, huh? Well, how about the Camp Town Ladies?
The Camp Town Ladies.
The Camp Town Ladies.
Oh, you know. The Camp Town leading this song, doo-dah, doo-dah. Camp Town racetrack 5 miles long, all the doo-dah day.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? I had you people try to get a little track lead, not to jump around like a bunch of Kansas City faggots.
Sorry, Mr. Taylor. I guess we kind of got caught up.
Listen, dummy. The surveyors say they may run into some quicksand up ahead.
You get the idea. Slim Pickens riding to the rescue. I say we execute a search warrant on Craven Bundy's house and see if he, well, you know, being Craven Bundy, he's probably got it on VHS, but let's see if maybe he's got a copy of Blazing Saddles there. Maybe it's filed under documentaries. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. The Camp Town Ladies? Ooh. Somebody get Mel Brooks on the line. Tell him that Craven Bundy's out there stealing his material. You know, that set kind of looks like Nevada. But the best part out of all this, going back to the follow up. The best part of this is that Craven Bundy, as awful as what he said was, well, really, there was more. There's about 3 minutes and 28 seconds more. Yeah. Nevada rancher Craven Bundy is at the center of a years-long dispute with the Bureau of Land Management. No, he's not, Washington Post. There's no dispute. He's lost. He has exhausted every administrative and judicial remedy, and he has lost. As Charlie Pierce said earlier today, the guy's got a worse record than the 62 Mets. I mean, this guy is the Washington Generals of losing court cases. On Saturday, April 19th, Bundy gave a news conference to supporters and media gathered at his ranch. What follows, dum-dum, is an excerpt. Yes, do tell.
And so what I'm testifying to you, I was in the Watts riot. I seen the beginning fire, and I seen that last fire. What I seen is civil disturbance. People are not happy. People are thinking they don't have their freedoms and don't have these things, and they didn't have them. We've progressed quite a bit from that day until now, and we sure don't want to go back.
We? Wait.
We sure don't want...
Huh? Time out. Time out, Jack. Okay. What's this we? They weren't getting their freedoms and we don't want to go back? Whoever stopped you from voting, Craven Bundy? Whoever dragged you out of your house in the middle of the night and beat you, or shot you, or burnt you, or hanged you? Whoever did that, Craven? Nail some sense into him. Nail him up, I say. We.
These colored people have to go back to that point. We sure don't want these Mexican people to go back to that point. And we can make a difference right now by taking care of some of these bureaucracies and do it in a peaceful way.
Oh, I'm not going to make it through this. We could make sure of that by taking care of some of these bureaucracies. Craven? You old fool. There's no fool like an old fool. Craven's proven it. Craven, that bureaucracy you're going on about there, buddy? Or should I call you Kleagel or Grand Dragon? Craven, that bureaucracy is what stopped Jim Crow. Stopped segregation. Stopped separate water fountains and banning admission to movie theaters, hotels, restaurants, lunch counters. That's what stopped the step-off rule and the eyeball. Yeah, we just get rid of some of these bureaucracies. I'm sure the Department of Justice is one of those bureaucracies. Hey.
Let me talk to you about the Mexicans. But these are just
things. Oh, do, Craven. Talk to us about the Mexicans. Wouldn't you love to know his working definition of a Mexican, i.e. anybody with a Hispanic last name? Tell us about the Mexicans, many of whom were on that land before you were, and who, oh, well, you know, maybe...
I know about the Negro. I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. When I go...
Now, wait a minute. He has been widely quoted as saying the Negro. That sounds as much about the word... That sounds about as much like the word Negro as the feller in Blazing Saddles does. Let's just check that out again.
Let me talk to you about the Mexicans. But these are just things I know about the Negro. I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro.
No, that does not sound like Negro to me.
When I go through Las Vegas, North Las Vegas.
Okay, this is what got him in trouble.
And I would see these little government houses. And in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids, and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. And because they were basically on government...
Now, hold on just a damn minute. What does "they didn't have nothing for their young girls to do" mean exactly? Oh, sage of Bunkerville. Girls. Marty pointing out, if Cliven has a copy of Blazing Saddles, he clearly has no idea what satire means. You can almost hear Mel Brooks groaning. Woof! One moment. But anyway, Marty also pointing out, you know, he shouldn't insult the Mexicans. They carry machetes. But, okay, so we got no idea what he means by their young girls. But what do you want them to be doing there, Cliven? You want them out there with the headpieces on doing the dances there for in the show girl? What? And why aren't there any jobs? Ah, good observation coming in from Devin. That bureaucracy he's complaining about is what stopped the black helicopters from lighting his ass up. Like I said, no fool like an old fool.
And so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail.
Well, how do their young children get to be their young girls if they're done been aborting them all? Plum evades me.
Because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as...
You know, because they never learned how to pick cotton. I mean, this is like parsing bad poetry in undergrad. You know, you just line by line. Because they never learned to pick. How many folks you reckon there are sitting around? Well, you know, it's a damn shame I passed on that cotton picking 302 there in college. There I was taking accounting. Who does Cliven want to be teaching the cotton picking? Confound it. Yeah, it makes you wonder.
What are you people, on dope?
One might easily surmise that. But do go on, Cliven. Continue to enlighten us.
Slaves picking cotton, having family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy?
It's a transfer. They just transferred.
Yeah, they didn't get no more freedom. They got less freedom. They had less family alive and their happiness. You could see in their faces they weren't happy sitting on that concrete sidewalk. Down there they were probably growing their turnips. So that's all government. That's not freedom.
Yeah, because, see, you can't have government and freedom. You can have government and not be free, but or you can have freedom and not have government. But the two do not mix. I mean, that's like political miscegenation, right? Yeah, you know.
Now let me talk about the Spanish people. You know, I understand.
Oh, good. Now we're going to talk about the Spanish people now that we've cleared up the...
...stand that they come over here against our Constitution and cross...
Huh? Oh, stop! Okay, we're going to back up, and we're going to let it roll for a minute.
That's not freedom. Now let me talk about the Spanish people. You know, I understand... that they come over here against our Constitution and cross our borders. But they're here, and they're people.
Well, I'll be dipped. I guess that makes him a liberal teabagger. They're here, and they're people. But they come over here against our Constitution. Because, you know, it says right there in Article 19 and a half, Section a blue pizza, it says that the Spanish people shall not be a-coming over here against our Constitution. Wouldn't you like? No, you wouldn't. You couldn't stand it. You'd be crazier than a sprayed roach by the time you got done, just trying to get Cliven Bundy to explain what he thinks is in the Constitution. Good God! Again, our Constitution. But then again, he doesn't recognize the federal government. So whose Constitution? Is he talking about the Confederate Constitution? Whose Constitution? Maybe it's the one Mark Levin's going to write once we get our Koch brothers-funded Americans for Prosperity state called Constitutional Convention, brought to you by Carl's Jr.
And I've worked side-by-side a lot of them. Don't tell me they don't work, and don't tell me they don't pay taxes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he is. He's a liberal.
And don't tell me they don't have better family structures than most of us white people. When you see those Mexican families, they're together. They're
Now notice, this is a fascinating little expose into the nature of race. And they've got better family structures than white people. So, in one fell swoop, Cliven has just gone out there and done what all of these old unreconstructed Klansmen are ever so good at doing, and redefined white. Now, you take him, he claimed his family settled in 1848. You go back to those Bundys, Erasmus or, whatever, Bundy, and that guy's going to tell you that Irish aren't white, and Italians aren't white, and Jews aren't white, and Catholics aren't white. Right? Yeah. So while he does acknowledge that Mexicans are people, it's pretty clear that they are not white people. None of them. Even if they're whiter than a bar of Castile soap. Ain't white. Devin pointing out, apparently Cliven Bundy is more than three-fifths of an asshole. Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy. And thanks going out to Sal. Thank you, Sal. Sal and Karen have gotten a little chunk of the hole filled in. We now need to raise only $375 for the evening. And by golly, maybe we can do it. But no, really. Back to you, Cliven. Craven.
Work side-by-side a lot of them. Don't tell me they don't work, and don't tell me they don't pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And don't tell me they don't have better family structures than most of us white people.
Us white people. That's kind of like back in the classic days of baseball when Robin Roberts, who was a pitcher, pitchers are notorious for not being able to hit the ball very well, not being much in the way of the batting department. But Robin Roberts was a bad hitter from either the right side of the batter's box or the left. He was a bad switch hitter. And so he made great sport in various interviews to working in the phrase "switch hitters like me and Mantle." Yeah, white folks like us.
When you see those Mexican families, they're together. They're picnicking together. They're spending their time together.
Picnicking.
And I'll tell you, in my way of thinking, they're awful nice people. And we need to have those people join us and be with us, not come to our party.
The Aricept is not working.
Helicopters and armored personnel carriers moving.
no, they're not coming after Clive and Bundy. That was just a roll past. Anyway, in addition to this, yeah, because this is just beautiful. Before all those comments about what is charitably being referred to as his remarks about the Negro, that one, oh dear. Cliven asked the question in regard to all the idiots who have come out to stand up for his ability to scam the federal government and you know, run a scofflaw on, you know, a million or so dollars or however much it is he owes in back fees. He asked, where is our colored brother? Where is our Mexican brother? Where is our Chinese? Where are they? They're just as much American as we are, and they're not with us. If they're not with us, they're going to be against us. You got that? I mean, you speak right-wing dog whistle code, right? We've learned that over the years. He just hauled himself out some George W. Bush. If they're not with us, they're going to be against us. Where are our Chinese brothers? So that's, you know, that's a coded dog whistle to the idiots with the sniper rifles, that it's okay to maybe take a few pot shots at black folks, Asian folks, or, you know, Hispanic folks. They're not with us. They're against us. Where's my pudding cup? God damn it. Somewhere gone. Could have sworn my pudding cup was right here. You know... You know, that Judge Joe Brown comes on in a few minutes, and I got to get back inside. Steve, with a note, from China, no less. Just north of downtown Vegas, you got your Clark County Public Library, too. But you won't find any fake cattle ranchers in screw-on cowboy hats there. Anybody stupid enough to be raising cows in the Mojave Desert in the 21st century ought to be tied to a post and horsewhipped for his own good anyway. And see, I'm a little bit geographically challenged because my time in Vegas was pretty limited. I mean, when I noticed that the soles of my shoes were melting there in July, I beat a hasty retreat back into the hotel. But yeah, it is. And, I mean, grazing cattle on desert scrub? That's, you know, deserts are fragile ecosystems. Oh, there he goes again. Next thing you know, he'll be talking about the birds and the bugs and the beetles and the butterflies. Damn tree hugger. I love that, though, Steve. Just north of downtown Vegas, you got your Clark County Public Library. And no, I've got a pretty good idea that Craven Bundy has never been there. He was too busy watching that government building. Wait a minute, maybe the government building was the Clark County Public Library. You know, if he isn't squatting on it, it's probably government, right? God damn, what a fool. I mean, we've had a parade of them since 2008. I mean, Sarah Palin, Rick Perry, Steve... come on, Iowa, Louis Gohmert, Brent Farenthold, any number of asshats from Alabama and South Carolina and lies from the pits of hell, Paul Brown of Georgia and you know, 1L Michelle and, you know, it's seemingly endless. Yeah, you know, he's probably just waiting to get his... this is true. Devin notes, Bundy needs to go to the Bunny Ranch, get laid, and chill the F out. And probably, but no, he's just waiting until he's got his whole entire planet full of concubines. I mean, he won't pay the government for fees to graze cattle. You think he's going to pay a sex worker at the Bunny Ranch? Really? Yeah, me neither. Where are our Chinese brothers? I don't think he's in the chat room right now, but I got a sneaking suspicion that Tim from L.A., who is not Chinese but Japanese, is of Japanese heritage. I think he's going to love that line. Oh, Tim's just going to love that. See, Cliven is thinking back to the good old days when, yes, Devin, exactly, the old Kolob reach-around, precisely. But, you know, back to the good old days when Asian immigrants were brutal. Well, it was slavery, for all intents and purposes, brought to the United States to lay the railroad. Texas T pointing out in the chat room, I wanted to take a van full of progressive black friends who own guns out to the ranch to support Cliven. Sounded like a good idea to me. Wow. Where are our black brothers now that we gave them their freedom? Why won't they help me squat? But the fun part of this is, since this story broke, watching people run away from Craven Bundy. For instance, let's check in with Radio TV Rwanda, where apparently a Cliven Bundy blackout has now occurred. I mean, they've run away from this story faster than CNN would quit reporting on the airplane if that thing was found. I mean, I don't understand CNN, but you know they're sitting there going, please don't let them find it. Please don't let them find it. Please don't let them find it. Even though what was left of CNN's credibility is apparently 5,000 feet beneath the surface of the Indian Ocean with the airplane. After days and days and days and days and days and days and days of breathless reporting on patriotic hero American Cliven Bundy, Fox News went full fathoms five and absolutely radio silence. I mean, run silent, run deep on Cliven Bundy today. 9 solid hours today of top quality Radio TV Rwanda broadcasting, and not a single mention of American patriot hero Cliven Bundy. It actually took Joe Trippi, who had been brought on regarding the Keystone XL pipeline, of all things. Yeah, I like that idea too, Devin. I was thinking about that a few minutes ago. Maybe the new Black Panther Party could show up out there in Bunkerville and help defend Cliven's freedom. The Fox attack blonde hair would just spontaneously combust. So Gretchen Carlson was talking to Joe Trippi. And he said, the same people, by the way, who argue about Bundy Ranch that the feds are coming in. And at the mention of Bundy, boom, Gretchen Carlson cuts him off. All right, let's not bring that into this discussion. I don't want to bring that into this discussion, she said. No, of course you don't, Gretch. But of course, the centerpiece of all of this was life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity. Sean has been doing everything in his power to try to gin up a civil war since this thing broke, talking about what an American hero Cliven Bundy is and how the American federal government, Obama, socialism. And then, all of a sudden, this, today.
Beck and I, we had a private conversation as this Cliven Bundy case got started. We both agreed it was government overreach. We both lamented, and he could talk about it if he wants. I don't think he cares that I'm talking about it. We're both concerned at the people that were showing up. We were both concerned about what could happen. We both expressed concern that we didn't want to see agents, BLM agents, federal agents, the tape to prove it. We didn't want to see them get hurt. We wanted to see the situation be diffused because it was getting very volatile, very dangerous.
And he didn't want to see the BLM agents get hurt. You know, you need to clear out of Nevada. It'd be awful if something happened to you. I mean, they got sniper rifles up there with really, really, really high-powered scopes on them and stuff. I mean, you might want to leave. Don't want anybody to get hurt.
Yeah, people with guns. And my point had been from the beginning, and it remains today, that this was an example when you've got, what, in this case, you got a couple of hundred armed agents, sharpshooters, snipers, dogs, stun guns, and then you got another group coming out because they think it's government overreach. It was a prescription for a disaster. Remember Waco, Ruby Ridge, all these other cases. And for what I couldn't understand is all over what? The fact that he didn't pay the government for the grass that his cattle ate.
How much
my
grass?
My attitude was the same as Judge Napolitano's. Put a lien on the property. That's what you do. Get a judgment order, put a lien on the property.
How do you put a lien on your own property? It's government land, Sean, you haircut. They tried to round up the cattle, and the goobers with the guns come running out of the sagebrush, you know, screaming, Wolverines! Because they's going to protect freedom. Put a lien on the property.
Lien on the cattle, whatever you got to do.
Defuse this
before somebody gets killed.
Wasn't that what they were trying to do? Round up the cattle, get them off the property? Jesus.
So now you've got a case where Cliven Bundy, in an interview first broken in the New York Times, his comments are beyond repugnant to me. They are beyond despicable to me.
Okay. Explain why, Sean. Which part? The part about the Mexican picnics and how Mexicans ain't white? Or the part about the Negroes aborting their little children who then grow up to be young girls with nothing to do sitting on the steps of the government house? Or is it the part where the young men should have learned how to pick cotton? Which part, Sean? Because, I mean, there's a lot to work with there.
They are beyond ignorant to me. And my level of anger is about every election year, they want to say Republicans what? Or conservatives what? That conservatives are racist?
Only because you are, Sean! Hey, Sean. with that name, Sean, and that last name, Hannity. You know that you do know that Cliven's ancestors didn't think you were white, right? Just checking.
Conservatives hate women. Conservatives want old people to die, granny over the cliff. They want the young people. They don't want to. They want young.
And there goes Cliven Bundy approving it. Dag nabbit! We done told you you don't say that stuff in public, Cliven.
People to fend for themselves. They want to, you know, poison the air, poison the water.
Sean? They do. They do. We got the Koch brothers running ads in West Virginia right now because the water is not poisonous enough. Because the air doesn't contain enough ultrafine particles for babies to breathe, Sean. That ain't George Soros running them ads.
So people that, for the right reasons, saw this case as government overreach, now are like branded because of the ignorant, racist, repugnant, despicable comments of Cliven Bundy.
Because when you lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas, Sean! I mean, otne ute itbre if you one what I ain me! Sean wallowed all over Cliven Bundy, and now he's wondering why the hell he's scratching. Just a few days ago, Cliven Bundy was an American patriot standing up to, you heard him, government overreach.
This is what he said on a radio show.
The New York Times today, which this morning published a story about you in which they were quoting from a statement you made, I guess to a, it might have been an impromptu press conference, and now the theme across the internet is Cliven Bundy is a racist because he thinks blacks were better off under slavery. Do you want to clarify those remarks?
Oh, do clarify. Really? There's more?
Yes, and, you know, if what I said, I'm wondering. And you know, I know Glenn Beck, he has something on the internet or news, and he uses the word, I'm wondering. And when they come to me, I said, that's exactly what I said. I said, I'm wondering.
So as long as he's just wondering, I mean, just because you're wondering if maybe we had less lawlessness when the Klan was about, maybe. Maybe, just wondering if maybe we did. I don't mean you're a Klansman. No, just wondering. I mean, I just wonder if Cliven's forebears might have been part of the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Where they slaughtered innocent people for, you know, maybe being in their way or telling things that's best left, because that's what you do when you love freedom, you wonder about things. Right? Oh, my God. I mean, you got to admit, it's fun watching them twist themselves into pretzels. Trying to slippery their way out of it. Oh, Honest to goodness. Do please continue on, O haircut of awesomeness.
If they're better off under government subsidy and their young women are having abortions and their young men are in jail and their older women and their children are sitting out on a cement porch without nothing to do, you know, I'm wondering, are they happier now under this government?
Cliven, why do you have to wonder? You could go and ask. Well, that'd involve talking to them. That's one thing to wonder, but you don't want to get involved in any race mixing or talking with them. Shoot.
Just turn it off. I don't even want to hear it anymore. It's obnoxious. Ignorant.
Now it's obnoxious. Now that Sean's entire career is wrapped up in his rolling around amongst the ticks and the fleas and the right with Clive and Bundy's bunch. Now it's obnoxious. Why wasn't it obnoxious when there were people with high caliber rifles and really powerful scopes putting crosshairs on the backs of BLM agents' heads? Why wasn't that obnoxious?
You know, it reminds me of, like, Todd Akin. Remember we had Todd Akin on this program, 3 days in a row, basically begging this idiot to get out of the race?
Because Todd Akin was an idiot. But he was only an idiot after he stuck his foot in it. Before he did, you was rolling around on the floor amongst the fleas and the ticks with Todd Akin too, Sean. You know what? This is one of those moments. He needs to own his hate. He needs to own his endorsements of racism. Because otherwise, he shows himself just to be a rank opportunist. He was all for a Fort Sumter in the Nevada desert until Cliven Bundy turned out to be the racist that Cliven Bundy has been all his life. You know, when the old coot's out there talking about defending freedom and his buddies are talking about putting the women and children out in front to catch the bullets, maybe that's a good time for Sean to say, Anybody know if Cliven's a racist? I mean, anybody seen him strutting around in a white sheet and pillowcase ensemble from Martha Stewart Living lately? Could we get somebody to check on that? I mean, maybe get a producer to just do a pre-interview and casually work in and just see. No. Why? Because money. It was driving ratings. God, this is not rocket science.
Because he's going to tarnish the image of anybody else that's a conservative or a Republican.
Yeah, because you're tarnished now. Hint, Sean, you were tarnished already. There ain't enough of the original molecules of whatever alloy you were to polish the tarnish off of. Tin pot. Note coming in from Dr. John. I am, he says, subject line, Cliven and slavery. I'm so sick of these unreconstructed racists, libertarians, and goddamn sovereigns who feel like they need to enlighten us about slavery. Look, so many of our problems today come from the fact that we as a society do not know anything about slavery. This is by design. We've convinced ourselves that the singular event of American history, the Civil War, was somehow divorced from the, capitals, peculiar institution. In social science terms, we think of slavery as an epiphenomenon, something that's only marginally related to another bigger thing, rather than as what it was. the very foundation of the utterly racist and unequal society we live in today. For a century, the master-slave relation defined all other types of social interaction, both in the North and in the South. Males dominated females as masters did slaves. Bosses dominated workers as masters did slaves. This isn't to say that white females and free white workers were in the same situation as enslaved people, but that the basic relation of domination that prevailed in those situations was justified, and given how pervasive this gets. I remember having my cup of coffee in law school, in torts class. And I remember learning about, there's a doctrine in terms of civil suits where, let's say, the boss sends his employee, let's say it's a plumbing contractor, and the boss sends the plumber out to come fix your sink. But on the way there, he plows into another car and does damage. Well, there is a doctrine in American law, and of course it's writ up in Latin, so it'll sound all official-like, and you won't have people out there thinking they understand the law and stuff, called respondeat superior. I believe respondeat is in the subjunctive. Respondeat superior, respondeat means let him respond. Superior, though, in your classic legal texts, is always translated. And see, having had a little bit of Latin, I know that superior doesn't necessarily mean this word. I'm sorry, I'm editorializing all over Dr. John. I'm going to finish his note in a moment. But he just lit this fire under me. It is pervasive. I don't care where you go to law school, or I would say in 99% of law schools anyone might attend, when you get to torts class and you start learning about respondeat superior, worker who went out and caused the problem, if he's on the job, we're going to have the guy with the actual money and the deep pockets answer for the harm his employee, his worker, caused. All right? And it's translated as let the master respond. And in fact, respondeat superior is a subsection of a portion of the law that is called master and servant relations. Really. And it's enforced to this day. This isn't some ancient doctrine that doesn't... No, master-servant is still an area of American law. And I remember learning about it during my cup of coffee in law school and despising, hating the idea of master. Because it doesn't mean master as in master craftsman, as in one who is has reached the absolute apex of her skill set. Master in the sense of master and slave, master and servant. And it's still with us to this day. So yeah, when Dr. John says the basic relation of domination that prevailed in those situations was justified and given ideological cover by slavery. Bingo! Slavery, Dr. John continues, was racialized over the course of about years. The Homestead Act, which allowed millions of poor whites to own land, was used to current and former slaves. This single government program has led to massive wealth for about 40 million whites today, and literally a fraction of that number of black people. When we think about the Civil War, Dr. John says, we're confronted with two problems. First is that we tend to be dazzled by stories of battles and so-called glory and the personal stories of the soldiers and leaders. Fine. But what's more important, the war itself or the trigger? The social conditions, the deep divide of class and caste and region, 51, and the rips have not healed. Second, there's the revisionism about the lost cause and the states' rights argument. You and others in the Horn Commune and Dr. Bill and Keith Lilly have masterfully demolished that mythology. And that's exactly what it is. It's mythology. It is not grounded in reality. Virtually every state that committed treason and tried to leave the Union and sent armies into the field to take up arms against the United States, which is, after all, the definition of treason, levying war against the United States, had some sort of a statement that they were doing so. Slavery is pervasive. For instance, last week, Jim DeMint claimed that not the government, but a change in the minds of good Christian people, that's in quotes, ended slavery. Aside from being historically inaccurate, this is a profoundly ideological statement that furthers the separation of the war from slavery. Because DeMint only said it because, A, he believes it, and, B, it is widely believed by a number of unreconstructed Southerners, closet Klansmen. Dr. John continues, to DeMint, slavery was just a simple case of misunderstanding. Once we just realized that commodifying humans was wrong, it went away. This artificially separates the institution from the vast amount of profit and wealth that were tied up in it. Slavery wasn't an economic system rooted in class warfare and racism. No, it was just this. Yeah, this could be an entire program, the denialism that goes on about slavery. And it is pervasive. A question coming in from Robert in Australia. If this Bundy person was grazing his cattle on his neighbor's land, what would the situation be? The case is by the U.S. government, so why is that different? Because the government is bad, Robert. In the eyes of birthers, deathers, readers, Republicans, and libertarians. Again, you can have government or freedom and liberty, but not both. Even though the Constitution, doesn't it, in the preamble speak to, oh, goodness me, I'm going to have to go. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That part about securing the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, that really is in the Constitution. Problem is, Clive and Bundy don't see it that way. He thinks that somehow his liberty is being impinged because government. So in answer to your question, Robert, if this Bundy person was grazing his cattle on his neighbor's land, the situation of trespass would be openly trespassing on his neighbor's land. And, you know, we had range wars in this country in the 19th century over such business and whether or not the wide open spaces could be fenced in. But the aggrieved person would have the right to sue him for trespass. But again, Clive and Bundy does not acknowledge the authority of the court system of the United States. He's a sovereign citizen. Clive and Bundy is a free man, liberty. Wolverines! Yeah. And you see, the other thing that makes it different is that when Clive and Bundy grazes his cattle on the land of we the people, he's supposed to be paying a fee to do it. This would never have been an issue if Clive and Bundy were not a moocher. He wasn't demanding welfare benefits to which he is not entitled. I mean, it really does boil down to that. that kind of beat Sean the Hannity job to the punch on this one. Yeah. He sure did. Here we go. You'll love this.
Got this morning. Now, this is broke today about what Clive and Bundy said. And I think everybody's going to make this, they're going to say the offensive, and I want is a fair conscience, don't be one of those people, or those who are trying to make excuses because this is who they really are. They'll immediately go to, well, Harry Reid used the word Negro. Yeah, and don't we know who Harry Reid is? Okay, so yes, we know
who Harry Reid is. Wow, it's about Harry Reid.
Let's not, that doesn't defend, that should say, and Harry Reid does that, and I know who he is. Okay, there's step one. They're also going to say, well, but he was really talking about the welfare state. No, you can talk about the welfare state and say that the welfare state enslaves people, but it is not actual slavery. And then what...
Peace, Glenn, you psychopath! You should not say the welfare state enslaves people because there's no actual slavery involved! Effing liars.
Andy said after that was, they abort their young children, they put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. Well, he just meant that as a metaphor. Did he? I don't know that.
Yeah, he's wondering, see? Glenn Beck's wondering, too. We're just wondering all over the place. Of course. I mean, just, you know, wondering. Because, I mean, how are you going to figure stuff out if you're not wondering, right? Sure.
Why? I keep wondering, yes, wondering, if you're wondering too. I pray every night to the good Lord above to send back to me the one I really love. Wondering, wondering who's kissing you.
Yeah, well, all the kissing has apparently ended between Glenn Beck and Cliven and Sean Hannity and Cliven. Wondering. Yeah. God, I feel kind of bad about doing that to poor old Webb Pierce. But how could you not? Sometimes DJing is just in the moment and in the situation, and it's otherwise unavoidable. Right?
Did he? Because listen to the next sentence. I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves? He's often wondered if black people would be better off as slaves?
At least Glenn is parsing.
And your relationship. If that doesn't end your relationship with him, you've got to go back and question, where did you go wrong? You wondered if blacks were better off as slaves, picking cotton and having a family life. They didn't have a family life.
Good God! He'll be whistling the International by sunrise.
That's the real key to what he said. And there's no way around that sentence. There's no, unless the New York Times made this up out of whole cloth. But it's my understanding that the one organization, the media organization that we warn you about, has reported on this. Did they report on this? Is that what I heard in the meeting today?
I have not heard that.
Not that I've heard.
Okay. All right. Well, that's point in their favor. I got to believe they were there.
Well, I mean, the previous sentence or paragraph to it says,
describes how Bundy has been doing daily news conferences. On Saturday, it drew one reporter and one photographer. So Mr. Bundy used the time to officiate at what was, in effect, a town meeting with supporters, discussing in long, loping discourse the prevalence of abortion, the abuses of welfare, and his views on race. So if he...
Long, loping discourse. Loping, no less. There was loping involved. With all the wondering. Oh, well. Watch them run. I mean flying. Yeah, I'm here. We're just, this whole evening, but there was Glenn Beck rolling around, there was Hannity rolling around. Never imagined that a stray old cur like Cliven Bundy might have a few fleas and ticks on him. And they's rolling around without their little collars or their, yeah. You can't pay to have this stuff written. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. Oh well. Before we run out of time this evening, I want to thank, we were at, $375 on our fundraising goal. Asa took it down to $355. Thank you, Asa. Then Ed took it down to $330. Thank you, Ed. And Tony took it down to $310. So that's a nice lick. And we all really do appreciate it because, this is the everyday common struggle of the everyday common attempt to maintain independent media. And I wish there was another way to do it, but there isn't. Note coming in from our good friend Luda. Come on, Bob! Are you even remotely surprised by this Bundy business? I mean, that'd be like acting shocked and appalled when Dog the Bounty Hunter got caught spewing the naughty no-no word. I'd be more shocked if he hadn't been saying these types of things at all. Oh, I'm not shocked. I'm not a nickel's worth of shocked, Luda. It's just the sort of, no matter where you are in the cartoon, you know that the van from Acme Industries is always going to pull up at Wile E. Coyote's address. The only thing you're wondering, is when the van is going to pull up. And so this was the answer to that question. By the way, off topic, but just taking care of some loose ends as we head for the end of the program. Robert in Australia notes, today is April 25th here. It's already April 25th there in Australia. And April 25th is Anzac Day. From Wikipedia, Robert quotes, Anzac Day is a national day of remembrance in Australia and New Zealand that broadly commemorates all Australians and New Zealanders who served and died in all wars, conflicts, and peacekeeping operations, and the contribution and suffering of all those who have served. Originally, 25 April every year was to honor the members of the Australian and New Zealand Army Corps, ANZAC, who fought at Gallipoli in the Ottoman Empire during World War I. ANZAC Day is a national public holiday in Australia and is considered by many Australians to be one of the most solemn days. Hopefully it is marked and observed in solemnity. Sort of not the way we celebrate the 4th of July here. By drinking cheap beer and cooking frozen hamburger patties on the gas grill. Wow. If you're in Australia, a thoughtful and remembrance-filled Anzac Day to you. So here we are at 6 minutes before the hour, and lo and behold, we haven't seen any buffering in about 3.5 minutes. And I think that may be a new record for the evening. Oh, brother. I don't know if it'll be better tomorrow. I hope it will. And maybe dramatically better come next week. Now, tomorrow, of course, just a reminder, tomorrow is Friday on the Front Porch. And we'll get that going one way or another with the Horn Malloy Skype chat group via the phones, too, I hope, although apparently there's some problems with them, too. Oh, well. And let's see, tomorrow, depending on what changes overnight with the podcast and everything, and folks listening, tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $460. So I'm hoping things will happen overnight with the podcast. So it won't be that. Those are tough days. Thank you, one and all, for all of your participation in the chat room, in the on the Facebook page, on the Twitter, in all the way all the ways that you do participate. Thank you very much. Thank you for your contributions, which make it possible for this program to air and for us never to charge anybody for anything. Because, you know, there's nothing being sold here. Not the podcast access, not access to the stream, nothing on the website. That way, anybody who wants to listen to the program, technical problems notwithstanding, can listen to the program. When you contribute, you do so in large part keeping this going, but also in large part so that there will be no economic inequities associated with keeping access to the program open. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. Do please remember, by the way, to go to headonradionetwork.com and watch To Wisconsin with Love, and then share that video out far and wide so that others can see sort of the before and after. West Virginia is the after part. West Virginia is what happens when industry is allowed to run roughshod over the needs and well-being of human populations. And the pristine waters and the clean air of northern Wisconsin are the before. Let's keep the before where it is. Again, the video is available for your viewing at headonradionetwork.com. It'll take you straight to Vimeo. So it's time to get out of here. And I will note, as I try almost always to do, that always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.